Over the past decade, spending on state judicial campaigns has more than doubled. And a new report from the Brennan Center for Justice, Justice at Stake, and the National Institute on Money and State Politics gives us an update on the role that contributions played in the 2009-2010 state Supreme Court elections across the country. Joining me now to discuss the report and the impact that all that money is having is Adam Skaggs, senior counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice. Very pleased to welcome him back to our show for today's second backstory segment.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Lenny.
The report looks at the 2009 to 2010 election cycle. Were you surprised to see increased spending in a non-presidential election year?
Well, what we've seen over the past decade is that the overall spending on these elections continues to rise. Now the total in the last election cycle was actually down slightly compared with the prior off-year election cycle. But what we did see that was interesting and different this time around was a growing role of outside spending, so independent groups, money being spent not by the candidates themselves but by special interests and political parties.
The report notes that nine states accounted for $24.5 million of the $27 million that was raised by state high court candidates across the country. What was it about those nine states that attracted so much money?
Well, the highest levels of spending we see are in closely divided courts, courts where, in effect, party control was at stake. So take Michigan, for example, which was the most expensive state for the last election cycle. Michigan had a very closely divided Supreme Court. Before the election in 2010, there were four progressive justices and three conservatives. After a hard-fought 2010 election, the balance of power switched. So now it's dominated by a four-justice majority on the conservative side. So these very closely divided courts attract money by groups that have an interest in how decisions are made.
And then they run ads.
And that's exactly
and the,
right.
They're running ads on judicial issues.
Well, they're running.
So-and-so voted this way in that court case, and we don't want that kind of judge?
That's what some of the ads are. In Iowa, for example, there was a very well-known case where three justices who had voted to strike down a ban on same-sex marriage were targeted by out-of-state groups, out-of-state social conservative groups that poured about $1 million in TV ads, attacking those justices for their vote on that case.
So the three judges who were defeated had all voted for same-sex marriage?
That's right. It was a unanimous decision that the prior year in which seven justices on the court all voted to allow same-sex marriage. Only three of them were on the ballot last year, and all three were attacked, and all three were defeated.
Well, that won't affect Iowa's Iowa rule laws applying same-sex marriage, but it does send a message to judges.
That's exactly right. It doesn't do anything about the court decision, which was already resolved, but it does send a message to judges to be very careful. It says to judges, if we don't like the way you rule on a contentious, particularly controversial decision, well, we're going to come in next time you're up for re-election and spend as much as we can to vote you off the bench.
Do the nine states also have looser, more lax state campaign spending disclosure laws?
Well, it varies. It varies across the board. Iowa actually has disclosure rules that were good enough to let us know who was spending money to oust these judges. And what we learned is that the vast majority of it came from out of state, groups like the National Organization for Marriage and the American Family Association. Other states, like Michigan, for example, have very lax disclosure rules. So we can estimate, based on what the cost of TV ads is, how much money was spent. But we don't actually know who the donors were to the groups that ran those ads.
The figures that I cited, $27 million, that excluded party spending, didn't it? How much money are we really talking about?
Well, the overall total that we're talking about in the 2009-2010 cycle is about $38.4 million. If you take the money that the candidates themselves raised and spent, and then you add on the outside spending. As I mentioned earlier, we saw a rise in the percentage, the proportion of money that was not spent by the candidates themselves and was totally independent of their control. And that includes, in Michigan, for example, significant spending by the state parties, as well as special interest groups like the Chamber of Commerce, an NRA-affiliated group based in Virginia that spent a substantial amount of money.
Do we have any sense of whether the increase in spending is because more people and more groups are contributing or because the same people and groups are contributing more?
Well, I'd say the latter. This isn't a situation like the 2008 election where President Obama raised tremendous amounts from small contributions. What we see in judicial races is that the base of spenders is much smaller. And in fact, we documented the fact that in 2009, 2010, just 10 groups, if you add up the independent spending that they did and you add up the contributions directly to candidates, just 10 groups accounted for 40%, approximately 40% of all spending. That's a tremendous influence that a very small number of interested parties have on these races.
And they were issue-oriented groups?
Some were. The political parties in Michigan were two of these groups, as I said, that spent a tremendous amount of money. Most of these are business-oriented groups, though we did see the National Organization for Marriage joining the table.
But their lawyers and lobbyists contributed the most to these campaigns, didn't they?
That's right. But as I said, judicial campaigns don't attract money from a broad base of donors. They attract money from a very limited number of parties that have a direct interest in the courts. Lawyers and lobbyists are the biggest group, and then you have business groups that are frequent litigators. They are also very interested in the outcome.
Is it clear what they're getting for their money? Are candidates for these seats on the bench becoming more explicit about how they might rule on certain issues before they're elected?
Well, with that small base of donors to raise money from, if you want to win a seat on a state high court, you need to court a set of donors that can give you a campaign war chest. So candidates are. They're signaling, I'll be a reliable conservative voter. I'll be a reliable liberal vote. And what that's done is it has decreased the likelihood that we'll have moderate justices. The middle-of-the-road judges that have frequently been on our benches in the past have a much more difficult time getting elected in this environment.
My guest is Adam Skaggs, S-K-A-G-G-S, senior counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice. We're talking about a report on the doubling of funds going into state judicial campaigns, most of them from out of state.
In some cases, the Iowa race I talked about over the gay marriage issue, the vast majority of that money was out of state. In other cases, there are in-state groups that are spending.
Now, you mentioned party spending. Is one party spending more than the other?
Well, in Michigan, the Republican Party did outspend everybody else, and they did sweep the election and, as I said, took back control. But historically, it's not limited to one side or the other. In 2008, we saw a rough parity between groups on the left and groups on the right. In 2010, groups on the right were spending much more, and that may partially reflect the overall political environment, which was so hostile towards Democrats that it may have driven some of that spending out.
On the other hand, we just recently saw an election yesterday in Ohio, or the day before, where union money, the unions outspent everybody and got a vote that was very much in their favor.
Right. And the most recent judicial election was in Wisconsin this spring in April, which basically became a referendum over a very similar union, collective bargaining question. So these issues influence judicial races as well. And I think when we get into the 2012 season, I suppose we're already in that election season, as that cycle heats up, I think we're going to see much more money flowing into judicial races as well. So I think we'll see those numbers rise as they always do during presidential years.
The report notes, so great was the independent spending in Michigan that the four Supreme Court candidates at times seemed like bystanders in their own elections. Is that kind of dynamic likely to happen in other states?
Well, I think, what happens in some of these contests is that these groups don't give their money directly to the candidates, but they launch independent campaigns and vastly outspend the candidates. The Wisconsin race I talked about in April was a very similar dynamic. And I think that's not unique to judicial races. That's what we're seeing across the board with the rise of these super PACs and other so-called independent expenditure organizations. The amount of money being spent in elections that is not controlled by or accountable to the candidates, that we can't hold the candidates accountable for the spending because it's done by so-called independent groups, is on the rise across the country. And that, as I said, will be, I think, the dominant story of the 2012 election.
And most of the money is probably going into ads. and related things. But how much does the average voter pay attention to judicial elections?
Well, I think not a tremendous amount, which is, I think, why we see so many TV advertisements. Unlike a race for governor or president, where most voters have at least some knowledge of the candidates and the issues, with judicial races, aside from a small number of lawyers and businesses that litigate frequently, not a lot of citizens pay a lot of attention. Citizens often don't even know the names of who's on the ballot for these judgeships.
But then they see these ads, and do they wind up voting influenced by them?
I think so. What you see is these last-minute ad blitzes that come on during the last week or a couple of weeks before the election, and they paint the candidates in horrible caricatures, decrying them as being soft on crime and coddling criminals. And the public, with little other information about the qualifications or experience of who's running for seats on the bench, makes their decisions based on these often misleading and often inflammatory advertisements.
Judges are also selected for the bench by merit. Is the spending and attention on these elections putting pressure on merit systems as well?
Well, what was unique in many ways about the 2010 election and the numerous attacks on judges like the attacks in Iowa is that it didn't stop after Election Day. The sort of anger directed at the bench, directed at the judiciary, continued into the next year and into the legislative sessions in 2011, including a number of attacks on so-called merit selection systems.
The report notes that more judges were threatened with impeachment. Is that part of an increased level of intimidation of the judiciary?
I think it absolutely is.
And who's doing that threatening? Is that state legislatures?
That's exactly right. And the same group, for example, in Iowa that had campaigned to kick the judges off the bench, then the judges who weren't on the ballot, they tried to impeach them when January came around. The same hostility towards state judges that we document in this report, I think, is echoed in the comments of a number of the leading Republican presidential candidates. With the exception of Romney and Huntsman, every other major candidate for the Republican nomination has made a series of attacks on judges and the integrity of the judiciary and said, Newt Gingrich has said we should shut down the courts and close the doors. I don't think that's healthy for a democracy to be attacking the judicial branch.
Are some states worse than others?
Well,
you mentioned Michigan.
Michigan was, I think, you can accurately describe Michigan as kind of the poster child for the problems with elections. There are a number of states we've documented over the past years that have had serious problems: Alabama, Texas, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
We have a link to the report, The New Politics of Judicial Elections 2009-2010, on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Adam Skaggs for joining us today.
Thanks for
On tomorrow's show, Sam Waterston, Kelly O'Hara, and Michael McKean will talk about starring in the Public Theater's production of King Lear, and then we will look at the recent restoration of George Melies' pioneering hand-painted 109-year-old film, A Trip to the Moon. Also, Charlotte Gainsbourg on her role in the new Lars von Trier film, Melancholia, and our latest piece explained is all about how various New York City landmarks like the Major Deacon Expressway, Tompkins Square Park, and Stuytown got their names. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Sarah Waltuck and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. Andrew Dunn was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.